Here with legendary Mario Andretti. Mario, a couple of questions for you. First of all, what's your role on a day-to-day basis now with your son and your grandson?
Well, I don't have an official role by choice. I'm just, pretty much a sounding board if they need it. But, again, I don't make all the races, so I pretty much stay superficial. They have their own, complex of staff, and they have their own way of doing things, so that's the way it is.
Mario, let me ask you, one of the things that we hear about drivers, especially in the IndyCar series today, is that there's a lack of diversity in their driving. When you drove everything, sprints, midgets, IndyCars, Formula One, stock cars, if it had wheels, you drove it. But we don't see any of these IndyCar drivers trying to venture out beyond the IndyCar series. Do you think that would help the drivers of today and bring up some of the quality of the field at this point?
I don't think there's any lack in quality of the field, to be honest with you. I think there's a lot of depth. If you really look at the races, how competitive they are, this versatility factor is something very personal. I don't think it's anything that would be, okay, you got to do this to be good. It's just a matter of right now, because of the testing restrictions, they probably don't get enough miles to test and be more prepared when it comes to the track. You know, I'm just watching some of the changes they're making, and my hair stands up because, it's changes you make during a regular test, not on a race weekend, but they don't have any choice, so that's really what's happening now. But I'll disagree as far as, not realizing there's a lot of talent out there and a lot of depth in the field.
I think I used the wrong word. I didn't want to say the talent of the field, but just the diversity of the driver helped them, like you said, make up for some of that lack of testing that they're allowed to do now.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, experience is experience no matter what you drive. I agree with that. I personally was never out of a race car. There was a two-week lull in between. I was racing something else. But that was me. That was, my preference and my choice. I'm not saying that was good or bad. It worked for me.
One more thing. You lived through, obviously, very involved with the split of 79 and the split of 96. Do you have concerns about where these rumors of the car owners now showing some dissent with the new car selection for 2012? Do you have grave concerns about where this could be leading in the very near future?
Well, I have some concern, but I think everybody realizes that any kind of boycott or something like that is certainly not the way to go. It's a matter of reasoning things out and try to come to a common understanding. And, I think hopefully, I hope the days of really trying to be antagonistic to the point of, hurting the series are over, I hope.
So
I'm not that concerned about that.
I hope so, too. Mario, thank you so much. I was wondering if you could maybe offer a comment about the news recently about the car owners and the dissension with the league about the selection for the 2012 IndyCar chassis.
I think it's very simple. At the end of the day, everybody's concerned about costs. So I think that's a common theme, whether it's the series or the owners. And that's the core thing. We want to bring more funding in, and then it would be less of a problem. I mean, and everybody's looking at every way they can to save costs. That's the long and short of it.
Is the issue that the owners have currently that we're hearing about, is it more that you don't think there's enough cost savings, you don't have enough information from Dallara at this point, or that the league kind of went forward with this selection without really the full consent of the owners besides just the representative that you guys elected in Jill DeFerrin?
I think everybody just wants a better understanding of what the devil's in the detail, right? And so we don't really know the detail. Tony Common's obviously a good addition, but the car's already in process to a certain extent, so I think everybody would just like to understand more detail. I think we need a new car, but teams have got a lot of inventory, so I think it just needs to be worked out between everybody.
Have the owners as a group, have you been given any indication either from IndyCar or Dallara when more details should or could be expected on this chassis? From a technical standpoint or any more details than the vague stuff that you've gotten?
I think we're still waiting for that. Maybe we'll have more tomorrow.
So these reports that, at least Robin Miller's report, that there's, you know, near unanimous dissent, I think was the words he used. Would you consider that to be accurate, or is there a schism between the owners on either side of the proverbial fence?
I'd say there's near unanimous concern. That's probably the best way of describing it. But I don't think there's any type of revolt, because obviously there's communication with the league, so everybody's trying to work out what's the best compromise for everybody.
Now, we heard there was a meeting between the owners, and I don't know if IndyCar was involved with that last week at Infineon. Is IndyCar doing do you consider IndyCar to be doing a pretty good job at this point of keeping you guys involved, keeping you in the loop on a regular basis, weekly basis, or, you know, semi-regular basis? Bless you.
For me personally, that would be something new in the Indy Racing League, so I think we need better communication.
Okay. Very well. Keith, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. Best of luck. I was curious, as someone who doesn't unfortunately have a horse in the race yet, but hoping to get back in the IndyCar series, do you have any comment on this, on the rumors about the 2012 car and this owner's dissatisfaction with what the league has done at this point?
No, I mean, only what I read, but I haven't heard anything, and I think it's happening, so you might as well get on board.
Yeah. What is the status of Ray Hall Underman? Are things looking pretty good for next year? We've heard that Graham may have a deal possibly for next year.
Well, I don't know about Graham. He's got a couple teams looking at him, but, you know, we've got some interest, so hopefully we're keeping our fingers crossed. You never know.
But is it something you think right now may probably on the likely, or right now you just...
I think it's probably better than 50-50.
Very good.
Yeah, still not done, though, yet.
It's good to hear. Well, we hope to have you back.
Thanks,
bud. Can you offer any comment from an owner's standpoint on the story that broke this week about the owners having some dissension with the league about the new car?
I think it's just discussion. I wouldn't say this dissension. It's just, you know, we're the ones that are going to have to pay for it, so I think we just want to understand what the whole program is, and it needs more definition. We're just kind of in the dark right now.
So from your standpoint, have the league or Dallara given you guys any indication of when they may have more information to give you?
Well,
on the car?
But that's the process we're in. Everybody's making a big deal out of this, but that's the process we're in. You know, they just put Tony Cotman in place, and you know, we've had one meeting with him, and we'll have more. And it's just a lot has to happen in a hurry for everybody.
When do you see the critical point of when do we need to have the specs in place to make this actually happen for 2012?
Last March. it's a challenge for everybody, and we want to be sure we do this right. So that's what I'm saying. A lot needs to happen in a very big hurry here.
So obviously you went through the whole process with the DP01 a few years ago in Champ Car.
Yeah.
What do you see from that that's kind of either happening right or not happening with this new process?
Well, I think that... I think it was defined when we went into it. They knew what the rules were going to be. We wrote the rules. They bid on a car, and we knew where we were going. Here, the rules aren't really written, and there's just a lot of unknowns. And I think that's what's got to get buttoned up. And
do you recall? Do you recall when that bid? How far out that was?
I don't remember the time of that. No.
Okay.
No.
So from your standpoint, though, you wouldn't go so far as to say that there's a dissension or a certainly nowhere near a revolt, if you will.
No, not at all. No, I, you know, with when we did the Panos, when we did the DP01, you know, we went down there. We had an owners meeting down there at Panos just to kind of, you know, review where we were and get people's input, and everyone was engaged in the process. We can't afford to make mistakes in this. You know, this is an expensive venture for us to do, and we want to be sure we get it right. I mean, the car that you see, this 2003 Dallara that you see on the racetrack today, that was put out in 2003, the car that we have here has a million different parts on it because there were some mistakes that were made and some things that were learned. We just want to be sure that we've got all that buttoned up. If we go into a new car and we have that same problem, it'll really be problematic.
So since the July 14th announcement, has the league, at least in your opinion, done better about in keeping the owners in the loop? Have they communicated with you, or are you guys still kind of, unfortunately, in the dark with some things?
Well, I think that's probably why why we're curious, because we've been informed, and what we learn is that there's still a lot of details that aren't known.
Okay.
So if we were informed, here's bang, 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 here's the rule book, here's what the car is going to be shaped like, here's the suppliers, here's the prices, that'd be, we would be happy. The problem is that's not in place yet, and that's what our concern is. There's so many things that aren't in place yet. So that's what makes us anxious.
And with Tony Cotman now officially leading that program, do you feel better now that this will go down that road that you guys needed to go down? To make
yeah,
sure.
Tony's done this before. I mean, he did it with the DP01, and yes, I've got a lot of faith in Tony, but it's, you know, what restrictions are there, and, you know, the details of the contract with Dallara, you know, we don't need to know the business terms of it. We need to know the technical terms of it. And so those are the kind of questions that can surprise you later on.
Right.
If we just put lots of heads together, we're going to be better than one or two. And I think that's all we're really looking for.
So as we stand here, August 2010, do you have confidence that we'll be in a new car, new IndyCar chassis in March 2012, April 2012?
That's my problem. I can't answer that today. That's the issue. That is the issue in a nutshell, that I can't answer that today.
All right, well, Dale, thanks.
If you're doing things in a hurry, you can make a mistake.
Yes, that is the truth. Dale, thanks so much. Seems like we talk to you every week. It's either myself or Steph.
Yeah.
Last time I spoke with you, you were at Iowa.
True.
Iowa didn't turn out the way you had hoped it to. You had a tough race there, but you've had a hell of a stretch with these last several road courses.
Yeah.
Been much more comfortable on the road courses, I assume?
I think that we're a little bit stronger on the road courses because, you know, the team has a road course background coming from Champ Car and all that. So we have a lot to learn here on the ovals. For me, too, you know, it's I'm learning every time I get back on an oval because, you know, I haven't really experienced how the car is supposed to feel. But, you know, I think if we just do our job, you know, if we just keep focused, like, on the road course, I think we can get there. But for sure, we struggle a little more here. But, you know, the races are long, and we'll see what happens.
Now, I heard you this morning on your radio. It sounds like you're having a lot of problems getting the rear end of the car to settle down. I assume over the tunnel bump in turn one, and I've heard maybe some in turn three.
Yeah, there's some bumps in turn three, and, you know, we struggled with bumps pretty much on all the ovals. So I think we have to get that set, but definitely we have to find a little bit of speed. You know, we just saw it in qualify. So I hope the race car is going to be pretty comfortable, and we can move forward during the race.
Now, from a driver's standpoint, you talk about the bumps here. Obviously, you're going a little faster than you do on street courses, but you've had a great run on the street courses that are known for being very bumpy. What, from a driver's sensation, what's different about a bump here versus a bump on a street or road course?
Well, you know, I think a bump on an oval just really slows you down if your car doesn't go over it really well. On a road course, you know, it's bumpy, but you're so on the limit with the car that, you know, it's going to be a little, like, harder to drive. Here, it's just, you know, you want to find speed, and if you have to fight the car over the bump with the wheel, it's going to slow you down. So it's just kind of trying to find speed. You can't really compare, you know, road courses to the ovals. It's completely different animal. So I have a lot to learn, and we're just working on it.
So how's your race car seem for tomorrow night?
I think we're not so bad in traffic. Definitely, you know, I don't think we're going to starting that much up front. But, you know, we saw, like, in Texas, we're moving forward. Even at some other ovals. And, you know, just I have to learn so much. So it's just that's the biggest thing, you know, finish the oval races and learn as much as I can and try to improve it every weekend we go out.
Well, let's hope your luck is better than it was
in
Texas.
You. For sure.
Thanks so much again. Got Al Speier from Firestone here. Al, pretty good week for Firestone. You guys have been pretty praised for the work you guys did on the tire compounds last week at Infineon. Explain a little bit what you brought to Infineon last week with the tires.
Well, the primary tire was a tire that we had actually used as an alternate at Barber and Edmonton. So even the primary tire was pretty soft, and then the alternate was a brand new tire compound for us, and you never know exactly what you're going to get, but seemed to work out to pretty much everybody's liking. You know, it certainly went off. It's a very, very hard thing to do to get the tire to go off just the right amount without being too little or too much.
And certainly Firestone doesn't like to put their name on the, you know, a situation where, you know, you get blamed as a bad tire, when in fact that's exactly what you've been asked to do, is design a tire that does that.
Well, exactly. You know, it'd be very simple for us to just bring the primary Blackwell tires and leave it at that. And then we can do that, and that's a fine tire. But the series and even the drivers have asked us to bring an alternate that goes off to lead to more exciting racing. And yeah, it does put us at some risk, but I was very pleased that after after the race, all of the drivers and team owners were saying, look, they do that deliberately. It's not by accident, and they're doing it to improve the series. So if we can do that and help the fans and everybody understands how it works, we're real happy with it.
Now, when we hear you talk about the tires, we often hear you talk about differences between compound and construction. Is that a trade secret, or can you let us know a little bit what each of those different parameters, kind of what they control in the design of a tire?
Well, you know, the construction is really all the cords and the components that make up the body of the tire, and the compound is just the top layer, the tread of the tire that hits the track, and the compound is mainly a chemical exercise and using different oils and polymers and carbon blacks to get the most adhesion, and then the base construction is just what, you know, holds the whole tire together, holds the air inside. So think of it kind of like being the cake. The cake is the body construction of the tire, and the icing on top of it is the tread compound.
And you can change those kind of independently of each other, and you kind of have a good idea of what changing one will do to the durability of it.
Yeah, they're kind of two separate entities that are vulcanized together, but yes, we can change the construction and leave the compound alone, or on the other side, we could change the compound and leave the construction alone. But they do interact with each other. You have to get the balance right, but that's why we're here, to keep testing new things and improving all our tires.
Obviously, you have a very different set of circumstances this week on the Oval Chicago. Mm-hmm. What tires did you guys bring here this week?
The left side tires are the same tires we ran at Texas and Kansas. So they're a known entity, but the right side tires here are not a new construction. The body of the tire is the same, but the tread compound, again, the part that actually touches the track, is a new tread compound. And at least in the first practice session, we were very pleased with what we saw wear-wise and durability-wise. The couple laps we run here in qualifying aren't really a big test for the tires, but we're real confident going into the race that we've got a tire that's going to be good and durable and very consistent, which is very important on the ovals, so the drivers, as we've seen before, can race wheel to wheel or tire to tire at, you know, speeds well over 200 miles an hour.
Now, are these the same tires you'll likely take to Kentucky next week as well, or is that a different enough track that it needs its own special set?
No, Kentucky and Homestead will be very similar. Homestead a little bit different.
Okay. Now, range of these tires. It's obviously sunny, pretty warm right now. I don't know, I would guess low 80s right now. But we saw last year a race in the 50s. So obviously these need to have very working conditions, very different. What is the working parameters for these tires that you can comfortably run them in?
Well, you know, we like to see the optimum tread temperature somewhere probably around 180 degrees Fahrenheit to about the boiling point of water, 212 degrees. So right around 200 degrees. If they're much cooler than that, they don't have enough heat in them to really adhere to the track. I mean, they're meant to have some heat in them. But we've worked over the years, and our tires are not as temperature sensitive to ambient conditions as some of our competitors. So we can operate over a wide range of track and ambient temperatures without seriously affecting the grip of the tire.
So it would have to be pretty hot or even cooler than what we saw here last year for to start to affect the tire performance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're going to be fine this weekend. We can run probably anywhere from down around 55 or 60 degrees ambient all the way up to easily 100 degrees.
Well, I don't think we're going to get there this weekend.
No, I hope not, just for all of our comfort.
Yeah, Al Spire, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.